It is gone. A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over. Bronco wins it.
He got it. Pulled it right out of the bushes.
Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 236. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. Follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness, and recording this on a Sunday night in the middle of hot stove season, and joining me to break down some of the latest rumors. And I think we are actually moving towards our first big move. By the time you hear this, the Phillies may have already made their first big move of the hot stove season. But Justin Clue, who is currently running the good fight for us right now, is joining us to break down this rumor and some of the other stuff that went down here over the last couple of days. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, I would ask you how your weekend was gone, buddy, but you told us a frightening story before we came on here. So I'll just say hello.
I did, and I would say that the most critical move in Philadelphia in the offseason is actually going to take place in 2 weeks when they open a giant new Wawa near Independence Mall, as we learned in the news today. So anybody mentioned a big Philly news this winter, you got a big, decent chunk of it today. So good news, everyone. Another Wawa is good news for us all, right next to the cradle of America where our country was born.
Celebrate the birth of America with your favorite shorty. That's fantastic.
As our founding fathers intended
it. Exactly right. If Ben Franklin was alive, he would be housing 10-inch meatball subs all day long. You know he would. You absolutely know
Ben
he
Franklin
would.
Was alive, he'd be getting those subs in between, I'm going to guess, servicing hookers.
Wow. All right.
That's what Independence Mall is good for,
I guess,
baby.
So.
We all know that Ben Franklin... Ben Franklin was a ladies' man.
It was clear.
I'm going to say that I said that instead of the eight other horribly dirty things I could have said.
I appreciate that restraint, Liz Rocher. Well done. And Liz Rocher joining us from Yahoo Sports. Follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher.
Tweet at me with your favorite metaphor for the type of ladies' man Ben Franklin was at Liz Rocher.
Your filthiest Ben Franklin fan fiction. Just that's at Liz Rocher on
not
Twitter.
At John Stolness. I want to stress this, but at Liz Rocher.
Yes, don't you dare at John Stolness when you do this.
No, that would.
And
be,
if you don't, I certainly won't.
No,
I'm going to demand that you bring John Stolness in on this. This is exactly what he's on Twitter for. He'll act like he's better than that, but I think he needs this to be part of his day, like all.
Totally, this is what the medium was invented for. Frankly, I don't even have the words for it. That's awesome, guys. All right, well, let's get into our first.
Broken John.
You broke me.
Broken him.
You broke me. The erotic Ben Franklin fan fiction is what did it at 10:15 Eastern time on Sunday night, December 2nd. Now, we are getting some big news here into the Good Fight DEFCON alert system here. I think we're nearing DEFCON. We're at DEFCON 2, and I think we're nearing DEFCON 1 here, Justin and Liz, with this Jean Segura trade. Not the first move we expected the Phillies to make this offseason, but it looks like a deal for Jean Segura is going to happen here sometime over the next 24, 36, 48 hours or so, at least reading the tea leaves. That's what it seems to be saying. Is Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic reporting that once the Cano Diaz to the Mets is official, which should take place on Monday, the Mariners have their next deal lined up. The team is in serious talks on a trade that would send shortstop Jean Segura to Philadelphia. Sources tell The Athletic Segura holds a full no trade clause and would need to approve the deal. Ken then followed up with another tweet after that saying, reported yesterday that Mariners have shown interest in shortstop J.P. Crawford as part of the return for Segura. So I don't know if we're talking about straight up Crawford for Segura. That wouldn't seem to be enough if I'm the Mariners. So you're probably looking at another prospect thrown into the mix there, which will kind of, to me, tell a lot about this trade. We talked about Jean Segura on the podcast last week, Justin, and I think we all agreed he would be an upgrade. He was a four-win player this year, according to Baseball Reference, for the Mariners. He's a two-time All-Star, made the All-Star team last year. He plays really good defense. He's a 300 hitter, something this team really needs, is a guy who consistently hits 300. He gets on base pretty well, has a little bit of pop, but also steals a lot of bases for you. Jean Segura would be an upgrade at shortstop. I mean, I think we all like J.P. Crawford and his potential, but there's no doubt about the fact that Segura is, I think, who we were all hoping J.P. Crawford would one day become. Now you get Segura for he's under team control for 4 years at a pretty reasonable rate if the deal goes through. What are your thoughts?
When we say that Gene Segura is the player we wanted J.P. Crawford to be, it makes it sound like, and I know you weren't doing this, but it just makes it sound like he's had all this time to become Gene Segura, and it's time to give up on that experiment. And I think there's this collective disdain or just this cloud of regret over J.P. Crawford in Philadelphia. There's this sense of he's going to go somewhere else and inevitably be effective, and maybe not like elite, maybe not even Gene Segura levels, but it doesn't feel like he got a fair shake in Philadelphia, especially as like the top prospect in the system for so long and the shortstop of the future for so long, that there's just sort of a level of acceptance you gotta roll with here in giving J.P. Crawford giving up on J.P. Crawford and upgrade. Like you said, it is an upgrade, but is it an upgrade on the J.P. Crawford of the future? We're not going to get to know that as far as him wearing a Phillies uniform, at least. And I think there's across the fan base, there's certainly people short-sighted enough to feel like they've seen enough of J.P. Crawford and to think that he's not worth investigating any further. But I think there's a large collective that would agree that, it is going to be exciting to see Gene Segura come in and take over at shortstop, and to have, somebody who hit over 300 last year in the lineup, somebody who's able to knock in base runners. But at the same time, if it means sacrificing J.P. Crawford, I mean, it's not like a bitter pill. And it's not unexpected the way the Phillies have even treated him this year as far as playing time. But at the same time, it's just, I think there's just this sort of collective, groan going up that's like, oh man, well, this is a guy that you always worry that the guy you're giving up on is going to go somewhere else and become great. And I think J.P. Crawford is a special case in that regard, because, he was the Phillies' top prospect for so long. And he was somebody everyone looked forward to seeing get his shot at the big leagues for so long. And it's been a bumpy road. And it's not like it's been all the Phillies. There were some issues with J.P. Crawford. He had to, pull himself out of a hole statistically. He had to get through some stuff personally. It was great seeing him come up and like hit a triple at the very end of this season. It wasn't, completely vindicating, but it was just like a great moment to see him come up and start hitting like a major leaguer. But unfortunately, I get why this is happening, but it does seem unavoidable that he's going to go somewhere else and just become this effective player, become this sort of Gene Segura that we're inheriting now. But I mean, that's kind of the position the Phillies are in now, so I understand, and it's exciting to have a productive, great player take over at shortstop. But at the same time, I think that's just part of the deal, unfortunately, and it does obviously affect the Manny Machado sweepstakes as well, which is I'm sure something we're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's get into Manny Machado here in just a second, but first, Liz, I wanted to get your thoughts on Segura too, because he does two things that the Phillies like and really need. He doesn't strike out. He's only struck out in 10.9% of his plate appearances last year, only walked in 5.1%. He puts the ball in play a lot. He seems to me to be a guy that if you got a runner on third and less than two outs, that's the guy you want up there. He hit .304, .341, .415 last year for his career as a .287, .327, .404 slash. But really, over the last few seasons, he's been like a .300 to .310 guy, .340 to .360 on base guy, and a .415 to almost .500 slugging percentage with the Diamondbacks in 2016. And that's one of the things I wanted to take note of, is he's been playing in an extreme pitcher's ballpark the last few years. If you look at his home and road splits for last year, they're really kind of eye-opening. He was a much better player on the road than he was at home. He was a .325, .379, .427 hitter, .806 OPS on the road compared to a .703 OPS at home. You got to think the power numbers are going to come up a little bit at Citizens Bank Park too, Liz, even though this is a tough giveaway if the Phillies are going to be trading away J.P. Crawford here.
I think the Phillies, they've made their choice about who they want. And I think it comes from looking at what they need. They have more faith in Scott Kingery than they do in J.P. Crawford. And I think that's just how, the dice landed this year. Mm-hmm. Baseball, you make the best plans that you can, and you need to deal with things as they happen. So mm-hmm. J.P. Crawford got hurt. They got a long look at Scott Kingery, and you know, despite what we all saw, it's obvious that they like him and they want him. And so, you know, and what they need is a guy who can be the player that we want J.P. Crawford to be in a couple of years. The Phillies don't feel like they have that time to wait. They don't want to wait anymore. And I love J.P. Crawford.
So do I.
I love him enough that I want to see him succeed somewhere else, because I don't think it's going to happen here. I don't think it's going to happen in Philadelphia. And what I want is for them to look back on it and for it to be, you know, I want it to the trade to work out for the Phillies. But I also in 3-4 years, I want them to look back and be like, well, that was dumb. You know, we could have kept him. You know, I want it to work out in that way where, you know, the Phillies get what they want in Gene Segura. But I also want it to work out for J.P. Crawford, because I think it will. I think maybe, I don't know. I think if he doesn't work out, we're going to look at his development and start saying Don Brown things that they kind of screwed him up, moving him up levels so fast. But I also don't think that alone is something that can sap a player's talent.
No. And I think the comparison I think of, Liz, is the Michael Bourne, Brad Lidge trade. Obviously, that trade worked out great for the Phillies because Lidge was instrumental in helping them win the 2008 World Series and was a valuable pitcher for them in 2010 as well, not so much 2009.
Nope.
But then Michael Bourne went on to have a great career in a couple of different spots. And that's kind of how I would like to see this. If J.P. Crawford goes to Seattle and then ends up someplace else or wherever he happens to end up, I'd like to see the Phillies win with Gene Segura and also for J.P. Crawford to develop. But like you said, Liz, I think that there's just too much baggage attached to J.P. Crawford at this point. You kept hearing different people in who cover the minor leagues and different people around the team, the whispers of some attitude issues surrounding him. Keith Law said something about it in a chat, and I heard a couple other people say something about it who covered the Iron Pigs. And, you know, how much of that is just I'm an older writer not understanding what a younger player does to prepare, how J.P. Crawford goes about preparation, or whether it was legit. But there's obviously something going on here where the Phillies said to themselves, J.P. Crawford is not the guy we want in the future. And I think the other thing that's interesting here is that all season long, we were hearing about Scott Kingery at shortstop, how great Scott Kingery was doing at shortstop. We love Scott Kingery at shortstop. They clearly don't love him at shortstop because they recognize the fact that they need a real shortstop. They need a guy like Gene Segura playing that position. And they seem to recognize that Kingery's best position is either to be somebody who floats around all over the place or to play second base. And so I think we have to remember that sometimes when we're listening to the team talk to us during the regular season, when their options are limited and they're telling us stuff that we know is not true, that maybe we need to just kind of cut them a little bit of slack and wait till the offseason to see what they really think, because now we're seeing what the Phillies really think about Scott Kingery at shortstop and their needs at that position.
Well, and we all knew what they think. We all knew what they thought. You know, we have eyes. We saw, like, it didn't take us long to realize that what was coming out of Gabe Kapler's mouth, while well-intentioned, was spin. A lot of it was spin. The dude speaks well. He's polished, and you want to believe him. So he is, in a lot of ways, the perfect dude for the Phillies to have as their manager, because he's going to run interference for them for as long as he's there. And I think that is a manager's job in a way that it hasn't been for a while, or maybe ever. But the Phillies obviously like him for that. They want him for that. And we all just have to remember to take it all with a grain of salt. Like that stuff about Crawford, I take that with a grain of salt, because one thing I know is that Crawford wasn't picked by this Phillies regime. People that picked him are gone.
Right.
I think pretty much the people that picked him are gone, with a few exceptions. And Crawford has seen a whole regime change. You know, he's got, you know, a pedigree of being a high draft pick, you know, picked very young and promoted very young. And I think maybe he got to a certain point and the regime changed, and so did everyone's attitude. And I don't think it's wrong for him to want a fresh start. I don't think it's wrong for us to want it for him. And I don't think it's wrong for him to get one. You know, we all hug our prospects very close. But at some point, we sort of have to let them out of the cage and fly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's time for them to fly away and be out on their own. And if they make it with this team, then that's great. But not all of them will.
And that's this offseason for the Phillies. I mean, they've said no. You know, all but two of the players are touchable in trades. And I think that's what I being able to say that Segura is the shortstop they want Crawford to be is saying that, like, yeah, all right, this team's ready to skip a few steps. It feels like it has enough pieces to skip ahead a little bit in regards to the development of some other pieces that were once considered key. You can't have so many as many young potential starters as the Phillies had and watch them all work out. And I think in Crawford's case, it might sting a little more because he was it was the last regime, but he was a Phillies draft pick and he was a top prospect for them. And he was someone that everyone was very excited about to see on the Phillies for such a long time. Whereas some of these other guys, you know, they're exciting and they came in trades, but they're a little new to the Phillies. And you know, it's not as like there's not as deep of an attachment there. But you're right. I mean, the healthy take is like, yeah, you really shouldn't be super attached to most prospects, if any, because as the lesson is learned over and over again, you know, things just don't work out. But yeah, I think that's the status the Phillies are in at this point. And I mean, it's honestly we're watching you know, the Mets new general manager kind of floor it with the Mets for whatever plan that apparently is. And on the one hand, you can ask a ton of questions about it and
so confident
point out, you know, you can point out there's negative and positives to the deal. I think if you wanted to, you could make an argument for either side. But I think that in that case, yeah, they're trying to jump ahead. And in their case, it's a little it's a little more confusing. But in the Phillies case, it's like, yeah, all right, this is a team that has taken a step forward, knows what it has in a couple of the players that it brought up to learn about, and is ready to make some moves. And that's going to lead to some like, ah, but what if? But at the same time, that's the way you find yourself when your team reaches this status. So I'm ready to see moves like this. I really am. And we talked about that last week. So
yeah. No, I agree, and we're going to get into the Mets a little bit more in the deal that they made coming up here in just a few minutes, but I do want to focus on Segura a little bit here, too, because our Good Fight Twitter feed put this out, and it's a story that should be mentioned a little bit more, is that he lost his infant son midseason in 2014 and nearly quit baseball entirely and kind of turned his game around and become one of the best shortstops in baseball. And when you're looking at the shortstop market this year, if the Phillies didn't land Manny Machado, we're talking about looking at guys like Jose Iglesias and Freddie Galvis and players like that, where, you know, if you want to strengthen up that position and you had lost all confidence in J.P. Crawford to actually play. And I would have liked to see J.P. Crawford play every day if the Phillies didn't make a move like this or sign Manny Machado. But getting Gene Segura is a huge move. You're adding, based on what that position gave the Phillies last year, you're gaining four wins above replacement approximately by making this move. Now, I mean, who knows how good Gene Segura is going to be next year, but he's still just in his late 20s, and it's a team-friendly deal. I think it's $14.5 million for each of the next 4 years, and I think it takes him through his age 32 season. That's pretty good. I mean, Segura is in his prime. He might not be just entering it, but he's in the middle of it towards the end of it. You probably have two or three really good seasons left from him. You've got a guy here who steals bases. That was a big thing with the Phillies last year. I know an analytically driven team doesn't like to steal a lot of bags because you don't want to make outs on the bases, but I think you make some exception for players who have proven they actually can steal a base. And so when a guy like Segura, you have that. You have a guy who hits 300, which this team didn't. Michael Franco had the team's best batting average last year. That can't be the case. I mean, you just can't have that. You got to have guys who get hits. And Gene Segura will walk a little bit. He's not anti-walk, but he's a guy who wants to put the ball in play. He hits the ball hard a lot. He's always had a high batting average on balls in play because he has speed and because he doesn't hit a ton of fly balls. If you're a guy
because
that has
a lot of contact. God forbid
a player makes a ton of
contact. My God. Yep. The Phillies need that so bad.
Yep. That's why I think this is such a good fit, because we are also talking about how are the Phillies going to improve themselves offensively and defensively this offseason? How are they going to manage to pull that off at the same time? Segura is one of those guys that lets you do that. So I guess my next question then is, what does this mean for the Manny Machado chase? We heard Jim Salisbury report on either Friday or Saturday. I don't remember exactly when it was. I think it was on Friday night, that they still believe that they can pursue Manny Machado. But obviously, Justin, it would be with the idea of Machado playing third base, because I don't think you would put Segura at third base. And Machado at third base, we know, is an elite defender. He struggled, according to some defensive metrics, at shortstop last year. But with shifting and all that, I don't know. None of us know what to make of defensive metrics anymore, positioning, StatCast stuff, all that stuff. So who knows exactly how good Manny Machado is at shortstop? I didn't get to see enough of him last year for the eye test to tell me anything. But when you're looking at this, it would make the most sense to have Segura at shortstop, Machado at third base. And I guess I wonder how, if the Phillies offer the best deal, but they want him to play third base, is he going to take a lesser deal to a team that's going to let him play shortstop? I have no idea. Neither do any of us. But what are your thoughts on how this affects Manny Machado?
Well, I would guess this is a free agent situation that Machado's been waiting for the way the rest of us have been waiting for, only he gets to receive the hundreds of millions of dollars and we get to watch him do that.
It's so unfair.
But that being said, I mean, obviously he wants to set it up so that he's in an ideal position for himself the next, you know, many years that this contract will be for. And if he doesn't want to play third base, then, you know, he's made that very clear. There's a reason we know that. It's because it's been made public. So, but I mean, at the same time, if he's been waiting this long to go on the free agent market and a team that was willing to offer him significantly more money just also said, we want you to play third base, can you imagine him not wanting to play third base so badly that he'd be willing to give up more money? I mean, I'm just asking that because to me it seems less likely. If there's ever a time you're going to be motivated by money in your career, it would be now when you're an elite player who's hitting the free agent market and you're like, all right, man, give me what you got. Like let's see what everybody's got in their financial stores. Everybody open your wallets for me, Manny Machado. So, I mean, if he doesn't want to play shortstop, then the Phillies are getting a shortstop. So if that's the problem, I don't see how the Phillies work around that. The Phillies at this point seem like they believe they're just in on everyone, which, you know, we've seen them connected to just about every player, but whether or not they're legitimately in on them, we don't know. And they might think they're still in on Manny Machado because they're still willing to pursue Manny Machado and pay Manny Machado. But his interest, you know, who the hell knows? So, I mean, obviously it affects that on the very fundamental basis of shortstop is the position Manny Machado has said he wants to play. And now it seems like the Phillies are getting their shortstop.
What do you think, Liz? How do you think this affects the Machado? How do you think this affects the Phillies' pursuit of Machado? And how would Machado look at this situation if he sees Segura already penciled in at shortstop?
I think it depends how much money they're willing to offer him. And we've heard some things that make it unsure, maybe, that they would offer a whole lot. I think the Phillies' front office is, you know, they're trading for Segura because they want a guarantee. If they want a guarantee, it means they're not sure they're going to get him for whatever reason. Yeah. Or that they would feel more comfortable with, you know, with whatever. You know, it's an interesting move. Why do they do this? I don't know. Like, I have to wonder if they're serious about still being in on Machado. You know, if they give him an ungodly amount of money, would he come? Would he look at the opportunity to say, I'm playing third base because my chosen team asked me to play third base and I'm going to be selfless and do that for them? I think that would be a good PR move for him, given his recent offseason.
I mean, I would do that. I would, if I'm like, hi, I could stand to make hundreds of millions of dollars playing for a team that's trying to put itself and doing a significant job of putting itself into contention. And also, I'm a magical third baseman who can walk on thin air and throw guys out from the stands on the third base side of the field. So I don't really mind playing third base. I just kind of didn't want to. So I would do that.
Yeah, right. No, especially if it means you're going to get the most money. I mean, if that's the biggest deal, and we don't know what kind of money is being offered, we don't know what kind of promises are being offered. But I certainly think if the Phillies come in with the best offer, any player would be dumb not to take that offer. I mean, like you said, whatever team signs Manny Machado is going to try to move him to third base in 2 years anyway. It's not like he's going to play shortstop for the next 10 years and Cal Ripken himself into an Iron Man thing where he's playing shortstop every single year. It's just not going to be the way it is. So at some point, he's going to be at third base. So if it's this year or if it's 2 years from now, take the money. And maybe he'll do that. I'm not yelling at Manny Machado to do the obvious thing, which makes the most sense.
You're going to make him not come. Stop yelling at him.
Manny... Just get over here. No, but I think here's the deal too. I mean, if you sign Machado and trade for Segura, that probably means unless the Phillies really don't care about the luxury tax and are going to try and sign Harper and Machado, it probably means you're out on Harper at that point. Is that cool with you guys?
No.
Okay. So the clear preference is still Bryce Harper then.
If they sign Gene Segura, they should, I mean, they shouldn't abandon Machado, but Harper should become their priority. They need to upgrade their outfield. If they trade for Segura, they've upgraded their infield. Move to the outfield and upgrade it immediately. Do not stop until you've succeeded.
You know what's very dangerous? And I don't want to jump ahead here, but we talked about AJ Pollock and the Phillies' connections to him and him in the context of being a consolation prize for missing out on Bryce Harper. And I realized today that I have not actually considered once that the Phillies would miss out on Bryce Harper.
Nope.
So every plan B I've heard, I'm like, trash. No. Why would I do that? I have Bryce Harper on this team. Wait, the whole point is that no, I don't. So anybody who fills that role is going to not only like have their not Bryce Harper numbers to fall back on, but also the fact that everyone will be looking at them through the lens of, well, that's not Bryce Harper. So what the hell are we doing here?
Well, if they get Machado and they get Segura, then I'm fine with going after like Michael Brantley.
Yeah.
That works for me.
That's the name I wanted to see. Honestly, Michael Brantley. I mean, what we talked about Marwin Gonzalez on this. Obviously, he's not the same level, not the same type of player as Pollock. Pollock's going to give you more power, but Pollock hasn't played a full season since 2015. And they'd be good for other things. And we talked about how Gonzalez is a better fit on a team that the Phillies are trying to build. So I don't know. I think Michael Brantley is, I think, a more exciting option than AJ Pollock in the outfield. Yeah. Liz, I don't know.
I do not like AJ Pollock. Get away from me.
Liz, would Michael Brantley, Gene Segura, and Manny Machado be enough to make you feel good? I think it would be for me.
I think so.
I'd be disappointed.
I think it would be.
If I had Bryce Harper and none of those other three guys.
Yeah.
I guess I'd be less excited given the amount of ground you're covering with all of them, but it would be a smaller margin of disappointment, I think.
Well, there are still trade avenues to consider too. If the Phillies sign a free agent starting pitcher, they can take one of their starting pitchers already in house, or take Adonis Medina and move him for a starting outfielder that might be on the market. I mean, who knows who it could be? There could be a million different potential trade possibilities for outfielders out there. But it's not just relegated to the free agent market, as we all know. There are trade possibilities as well. I mean, hell, last week Paul Goldschmidt's name was coming up in conversation. So, you know, once we get to the winter meetings here in about a week or so, it's going to start to get really silly and we're going to hear a bunch of stuff getting thrown around out there. But
I'm so excited about it, though.
I know, right? I mean, geez,
give me all the crazy crap. I want to hear it. I want the Phillies to be involved with players that make everyone angry because I want everyone to go insane. Just because I'm an agent and lover of chaos.
Just because you're not running a Phillies website anymore.
I'm gonna have to mute part of my tweet deck or eliminate one of my lists while I'm at work because I'm gonna be way too distracted if I have it up while I'm at work. There's no way. I'm gonna have to just get rid of my whole baseball list on my tweet deck to just get it out of my face for the 8 hours I'm at work, and then I can pay attention to it the rest of the time. But I know that I'm not gonna do that.
We'll tweet at you and tell you what's important.
That would be good. Yeah, just at me with every news, every rumor, just at me with it. Well, we did have one really big deal that took place with the team in the National League East, the Mets and the Seattle Mariners. I mentioned just a minute ago, as soon as this Cano and Diaz deal goes through, as Ken Rosenthal was reporting, that is Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz were traded to the New York Mets from the Seattle Mariners. Going back to the Mariners is Jay Bruce and a couple of top prospects, really. I think the Mets numbers 3 and 4 prospects, I think. Some who else is going back to Seattle in this deal? I had it in front of me and I just lost it. But either way.
You said Bruce.
Say again.
Right?
Yeah, Jay Bruce is going back.
Jeff McNeil.
Okay, Jeff McNeil. So there you go.
Did he end up in the trade? I thought it was Jay Bruce, Anthony Swarzak. I thought McNeil wasn't in the trade.
Here it is. But the Mets are sending Jared Kelenic, their 2018 first rounder, 2016 first rounder, Justin Dunn. Jay Bruce, righty reliever, Anthony Swarzak, and young righty reliever Gerson Bautista. Seattle is also going to send the Mets money to help offset the $120 million owed to Cano. The Mets are going to get $20 million, so they're going to have to owe Cano $100 million over his last 5 years. So, I think this is a deal that, at least on paper right away for 2019, probably helps the Mets out, because even though he was suspended for 80 games last year for using a banned substance, Cano can still hit. He's even at his advanced age, he is still a very good hitter. I don't know how good a defender he is anymore, how well he's going to be able to play second base for in New York, but he helps them offensively. And with Edwin Diaz, he had an incredible season closing games down last year. And the fact that the Phillies are going to have to face him over and over again this season at the end of games is no fun whatsoever. So, Liz, let me ask you first, what are your thoughts on this deal? Because it's kind of funny, the Mets out of nowhere making a big splash here before the winter meetings.
I think I'm going to ask the question that we all want to ask. How will the Mets screw this up?
Notes on that. Yeah. I was like, all of this is meaningless because we all know opening day, Robinson Cano is going to get stuck in a porta potty or eat romaine lettuce offered to him by Mets trainers.
You know, Edwin Diaz is going to have an anvil fall on him, being mistaken for a road runner somehow.
Well, by the way, you joke about Edwin Diaz, but apparently he has like a bone spur issue that hasn't affected him. It was part of the physicals were not a slam dunk because they just needed to make sure Diaz would be okay. But I think he's got bone spurs in his heels or something like that. A minor thing, but Diaz is pretty awesome. I mean, he's a guy, yep, I would have loved to see the Phillies trade for, just because I don't love a lot of the closer options out there in free agency. But nevertheless, this makes the Mets better in 2019. And given how they just pushed the Phillies around last year, the Mets are a team we weren't thinking about heading into 2019 as being a team to worry about. But, now I think, Justin, you have to worry about them a little bit.
If you're susceptible to peer pressure, then the NL East is a tough place to be running a team right now, with the Braves making slight adjustments but already being a threatening team.
Yeah. Josh Donaldson and Brian McCann. Yep, absolutely.
The Mets making these very dramatic statements by making these moves, and the Nationals, doing their dutiful filling out of their roster, even though they've also got plenty of talent in Washington as well. So the fact that the Phillies haven't really done something yet, I'm sure, is eating away at people. But again, it's very early. However, yeah, this deal in particular, it is kind of interesting, and it's a very entertaining deal. I'm gonna call it that. Bob Nightingale really liked this deal. He talked about it being this just one of these bold deals that you don't see anymore, because teams, GMs are too worried about losing their jobs or are too careful about planning for the future without thinking about the present. This deal feels like it's been being solely made for the present. This deal feels like, it feels like the houses they built on Arrested Development, those hollow houses that were just for a photo op that looked really good,
right,
but then collapsed when with the slightest push. Robinson Cano, in 2018, I think he would have had the second most WAR for a position player on the Mets. I know he missed half the season because of a suspension and an injury, but still, he does make them better. Like you said, they don't have a lot going on, but you look at his numbers and you look at their numbers in 2018. He's clearly an improvement. If he slots in at second base with Cabrera gone, I don't know. You got Jeff McNeil still there. So McNeil feels like, and that was one of the initial complaints, was that why are they getting Cano and trading McNeil? Why not keep McNeil and sign David Robertson or one of the closers who's available. But you know, Cano isn't like a solution for them. He's not their second baseman of the future. I hope they're not thinking of him as a second baseman of the future. He's going to be 36 in 2019. You know, the contract he got was what, to like 2023 or something. Mm-hmm. Like you're not getting peak Cano, but you are getting like an elite player who is in decline, which is still making the Mets better. Still at the same time, yeah, he's not anybody's solution forever. It does kind of have that feeling of like, let's get a recognizable name in here to get people like psyched, or at least get people talking about the Mets. Diaz, on the other hand, I mean, that's like a big deal. He's 24 years old. I'm with you, John. Like, the more we got to know him, because he was mentioned in a couple of rumors involving the Phillies, I am so scared of relievers. And typically, I have a hard time taking relievers seriously from a signing standpoint, because with a reliever, all you ever have is what's behind them. Like, I feel like bullpens are so up and down and so volatile that you really just – I have the hardest time trusting relievers and closers. Like, the best closers we have ever seen can, like, they get their deal and then suddenly it's, you know, something happens to their delivery, or something happens, they can't pitch in this ballpark. I don't know. It happens all the time. But he's a young pitcher, and he just had a historic season. He tied for the second most saves in a season ever with 57. He finished 65 games. I mean, you know, this was a huge year for Diaz. So if you can sign a kid like that who can turn baseball into an 8-inning game, and his arm's still attached to a young body, and he's throwing like 98, 100-mile-an-hour fastballs with movement and that slider that was just a slap in the face to the concept of offense, and now the Phillies get to see him a lot more than they would probably want to. I mean, that's why I think that's a big deal. That's a big deal signing. At this point, though, like, the other things we've heard coming out of New York, trading Syndergaard now would be such a strange step that would sort of scramble the optimism.
Yeah, and that's still very Mets, though.
Yeah, very, very Mets. So that's the next part of this. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Justin, but the whole idea of moving Syndergaard here doesn't make any sense if you make a deal like this.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were attached to Kluber. As far as
why are you going to trade for Kluber if you've got Syndergaard in house? Let me ask.
You've got pitching.
Yeah, that's the thing, Liz. Is they have the pitching. That's the strength of the team. And Brody Van Wagenen, the new GM, is the agent, or was before he took the job, was the agent for both Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom. I realize Jacob DeGrom just came off a historic season, but he's the much older pitcher. He's got like 3 years on Syndergaard, if my memory serves me. If you're going to trade either guy, I'm not sure why you wouldn't move to Grom instead of Syndergaard.
I'm fine with them trading Syndergaard. Get him out of the NL East.
Absolutely.
Get him as far away from it as humanly possible. It is the most Mets thing ever for them to be like, yeah, maybe we'll still trade Syndergaard and we'll add Corey Kluber, a dude who's, 8 years older than him? Mm-hmm. Like, I think, Kluber's 32?
Yeah.
I would like to say, though, Robinson Cano is 36. He is older than me. There is that makes me feel good in ways it's hard to describe.
Baseball.
Yeah, he's still younger than me, though, so it doesn't make me feel any better.
It makes no sense. It's the most Mets thing ever. But the one thing that this trade says, like, the Phillies need to get serious. They're not going to – they have to sign one of the big stars, because without it, they have maybe Gene Segura.
That's
it. Like, they have to sign either Harper or Machado to stay competitive. Yeah. Just to stay competitive, because the Mets have their pitching. The Braves have 2 to 8 young stars at any given time.
Yep.
That are really good, that just came up in their system.
And Freddie Freeman, who's an MVP candidate every damn year.
The Nats have Anthony Rendon. They have Juan Soto. They have good pitching. Like, at this moment, the Phillies are slightly above the Marlins.
They're above
the Marlins. They are decidedly in fourth place as far as talent in the NL East. There is no, you can't get around it. Every team has gotten better or was better to begin with. And the Phillies need to get better. They need to get a lot better in this offseason. And if they don't, that's a failure. And we'll only be able to really judge that in the season, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, Ozzy Albies could get eaten by a shark. Not that I want that to happen. But, you know, anything could happen at any moment. So, well, we won't know for a while, but it will feel like a failure. They have to get better, and they need to do it really soon, or I think we'll all just die.
They're going to. And, I mean, this offseason has always been cast as if they don't sign one of those two, Harper or Machado, then it is a failure. But using that word, I mean, let me ask you guys, if they don't sign Harper or Machado, hypothetically, and there's in this hypothetical scenario, they're unlimited as far as any other deals that they could make with free agents, potential trade targets. Could they make enough moves to make the season, the offseason, not feel like a failure without signing Harper and Machado?
No.
Yeah, it's right?
Well, I mean, listen, here's the deal. I think they might be able to, but it would really depend on, and I think it would have to come through the trade market.
By opening day, it would not feel like a failure. Or it would feel like a failure.
They might be able to make moves that would equal the output, that would get them close to what these players would have produced, but it's not going to feel as exciting. What people want, they want that Cliff Lee feeling. Was he the last major free agent to sign with the Phillies?
If you're not going to count like Papelbon, then yeah, I guess so.
Let's never ever count him ever again.
Excited when they signed Papelbon. It was like,
no, none of us were. Yeah, we were like, why are they giving him a $50 million contract? Why? We had no idea why. That was not fun. We all want the Cliff Lee feeling. We want to be the team that comes out on top, that sits on top of the world and says, yes, our team signed the best free agent out there. We want to run, we want to like wave our metaphorical, you know, top of the trade world nards at everyone for like 2 weeks.
Got to wave the nards.
We want that opportunity.
No, I agree with that. I do think, and I can't spell it out for you right now exactly, because again, I think it would have to come in the trade market, and we don't know who's going to be made available in trades during the winter meetings. But I think there probably is a way that the season could be successful, that the off season could be successful if they don't get Harper or Machado. But it's hard to see it. It's hard to see it right now, because without knowing who exactly is on the block and who you'd have to give up to get them, it's really difficult. Also because the Phillies don't have that high-end blue-chip prospect other than Sixto Sanchez to move for a megastar that would be on par with Machado or Harper. So, yeah, I think the long and short of it is it would be really, really, really hard to see this season as a success, as anything but a failure, if they don't sign one of Harper or Machado. But I won't say it can't be, because I think there is a way. I just don't know what that way would be. Real quick, just to double back, since we've been talking, we're here getting some more reports. Looks like this Segura deal is a done deal with the Mariners. Bob Nightingale and Jeff Passan both reporting this. Nightingale saying the Mariners and Phillies have agreed in principle to a trade that would send Segura to the Phillies for shortstop J.P. Crawford. That involves other players as well.
Breaking news.
Now, listen, Justin and I work for another website before, and there's a Seattle Mariners blog associated with that same company that's reporting Carlos Santana as part of the deal as well as another pitcher. So I'm getting that's getting tweeted to me quite a bit. I'm not so sure I'm buying that from Sodo Moho. Hey, and listen, I'll give them all credit if it turns out to be correct, but I mean, I'm going to wait.
I don't think anybody blames you for not
going to hold my powder on that. Going to hold my powder on that one. But that looks like it is a done deal. The Mariners and Phillies agreeing to a deal that will bring Gene Segura to Philadelphia. So, but your point is well taken, Liz, in that Gene Segura now probably is the best player on this team. And that certainly can't be the way they go into the regular season. And I'm sure that it won't be. But he already has the most wins above replacement by far of anybody on the Phillies, if you look at last year's numbers. And so there's obviously more work to do, which also brings us to, you know, we talked a little bit about Harper. We talked a little bit about Manny Machado. I find myself more and more with each passing day really wanting Patrick Corbin. I really do. I know, Liz, that that is not a deal that you would make for anything more than what, like 4 years, I think you said? You would
want Corbin on anything more than 4 years? Yeah, that's about as much as I do.
See, I would do. I'm at the point now because the Nationals' interest is scaring me. And if I got to go 6 years to get him and keep him away from the Nationals, not only do I want to do keep him away from the Nationals, I also think he'd be, I'm also envisioning him now at the top of the rotation with Aaron Nola and really liking that possibility. I'm kind of in on Patrick Corbin for 6 years.
No, what is wrong with you?
Yes, I am.
No, yeah, that's too much. That's too long.
Cole Hamels a 6-year deal back in 2012. And yeah, that would have worked
Hamels
out great.
Hamels had had more than he'd had a better track record than Corbin has had.
I'm afraid about Corbin because of last year. And
yes, why is everyone doing that?
I don't doubt that he would be definitely a helpful addition to the Phillies rotation. Definitely, if he pitches like he pitched last year, sure. But that one season of elite level pitching gets you a 6-year deal. I don't know. That just seems like you're signing up for exactly the same kind of trap that everybody talks about missing in this kind of. But I mean, John, I know I feel like we've slowly been watching you talk yourself into 6 years. I saw that whole if you're going
to
five,
yeah.
Don't do it
six thing. And like that makes sense. I mean, I get what you're saying, but yeah, if, for people whose cap is four, six is just it's so much, especially
that's
for,
it.
He won't pitch at that level for maybe even one other season, let alone six. Like, oh, yeah, that's a ton.
And let's not forget here that Patrick Corbin's family desperately wants him to sign with the Yankees. This was a tweet sent a couple of days ago from someone who attended Patrick Corbin's recent wedding. His younger brother gave a best man speech, and at the end, he took out a Yankees hat and put it on, which elicited a great applause. And they said they all hoped that he and his wife would be moving closer to home.
These people are monsters.
They are monsters. Monsters. I mean, listen, I think that's... I don't know what to say about that.
His family wants him to sign with the Yankees.
Why wouldn't they? He
should just do it. Yeah. Do it. Go do it and put us all out of our misery.
They're a bunch of Yankees.
Just
fans.
Do it.
Like that's what. Of course they want that. And if
see,
presumably affecting at least a little bit his decision. I mean, there's a reason we've all assumed he'd be going to the Yankees this entire time. I mean, I just did a whole thing on how Mike Trout's childhood fandom of the Phillies shouldn't be considered a reason why he would necessarily consider the Phillies over any other team as an adult. But that's exactly what people were citing when they talked about Patrick Corbin signing with the Yankees. But clearly those influences are still very much in play. And I don't know. It just seems like that's a much more natural progression. Plus, man, what would his family reaction be like if he signed with the Phillies at this point after that?
Well, Cliff, maybe Cliff Lee's family reaction. But yeah, here's the deal. I mean, for one thing, it'd be nice to steal him out from under the Yankees again, like they did with Cliff Lee. But
angle, that would be great. But then you got to sit with him for 6 years.
See, I think I guess I'm a believer in the changes that he made to his arsenal last year, changing his ability as a pitcher. I think adding the second slider was a big deal. I think he also doesn't have the mileage on his arm that a guy his age has typically. So you're right. He doesn't have the track record, but he also doesn't have the mileage. And there's also something tactile you can look at and say, this is why he improved so drastically last year. Is it a guarantee that it'll continue? It's not. And you're right. 6 years is risky. My point was, if you're willing to say 5 years, why not go six? But if your limit is four, you're right. 6 years is probably a bridge too far. So I would go six. And you're not going to talk me out of it. I don't care. I'm going 6 years on Patrick Corbin because I want him at the top of the rotation with Aaron Nola because I believe in the stuff. I do.
Hey, look, if the Phillies signed Patrick Corbin to a 6-year deal tomorrow, we'd be excited about it for the same reason that the Mets, bring in Robinson Cano to get people excited about tomorrow. It would be the next couple years that it would be less exciting news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, who we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I think the odds are still stronger that he'll go to the Yankees. I don't think he'll go to the Nationals, but that would also bug the hell out of me if he ends up signing with the Nationals as opposed to the Yankees or the Phillies. Because are you guys starting to get worried at all about getting Harper or Machado? Is your confidence, my confidence level feels, I guess maybe it's because I kind of figured one of them would have signed with the Phillies by now. Maybe I shouldn't have ever thought that they would sign before the winter meetings, but I kind of my confidence level is wavering a little bit that the Phillies are going to get one of these two guys. And I keep reading all these pieces that everybody in baseball still thinks the Phillies are going to get one of these two guys. And so maybe I should just take comfort on that. But I'm guarding my heart a little bit here because I do feel like I'm not as confident anymore that they're going to get either one of Harper or Machado.
I remain confident. I don't think they're going to get both of them. I'm not sure. Ever taken no, that very seriously, and I think that no matter what they say, Segura kind of like he definitely puts a dent in any Machado plans. Like I said earlier in the podcast, I would be surprised, and clearly think I was living in the wrong reality if they did not sign Bryce Harper. So no, I'm not any less confident than I was at the beginning of the offseason.
I'm not what either.
Yeah,
I'm definitely not. I'm just as confident as I was at the start that they'll sign one of them, partially because they have to, but also because we haven't heard anything real from anyone about anything relating to either of them.
That's very true.
The only thing we've heard from either of them is Manny Machado clarified his comments about the Johnny Hustle crap. And
poorly, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Poorly, yeah, I mean, by the way.
Yeah, like
it was so obvious. It was damage control. Homework, it's like, not even funny.
It's so much too late. But I think it's probably his agent said teams want to see you do this. They want to see you show contrition publicly, which I get. It wasn't really for us. It was for other teams to show that he's willing to go out there and eat little crow for his word, for saying that stuff. I'm confident we're going to hear. I mean, the only thing we've seen Bryce Harper do recently is hang out at a concert, I think, with Chris Bryant and his wife, looking like the whitest kids.
He's third wheeling people when he could be in the batting cage. This kid's got no class. No class.
I know.
No class, no hustle, hustle.
But we've heard nothing. We won't start to hear things until this weekend. The winter meetings start, the 9th? And they run for the next 5 days or something. And that's when we'll hear everything. We're hearing nothing now because no one is in the same place and everyone is still relaxing after the World Series, except for, some people.
Except for Jerry DePoto.
Jerry DePoto, who, if he's not making a trade, the day is a failure.
Yeah, no doubt.
Jerry DePoto doing push-ups till the phone rings. Yeah, he's having a great time.
Well, I'm keeping an eye on Twitter as we're talking here, because as we're recording this on Sunday night, more writers are coming out with more information about the Segura thing. John Heyman reports there's been talk of Carlos Santana being included with prospects in Philly's talks with Seattle for Gene Segura to balance the money, but the Mariners may be resistant to that. J.P. Crawford is among prospects discussed, as Jim Salisbury said. And then Bob Nightingale just a minute ago tweeted, the Phillies say they're still interested in signing Manny Machado to play third, as well as Bryce Harper in the outfield and Patrick Corbin on the mound. Hey, it's only money, right? Well, yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Only money. You can't take it with you.
That's why I'm saying
John
give Corbin
Middleton's
six.
Toy. This is John Middleton's toy. Let him play with it.
Do you think that Middleton cares about the luxury tax?
No.
No.
So
I don't.
Which has been the question the whole time. And no, how he can't. He can't. If those are his plans, how can he care about the luxury tax at all?
I wouldn't think if he doesn't care about the luxury tax, then he very well could sign everybody.
Yeah,
he could. And that's the thing. When I read those stupid comments, that stupid money comment, that's the first thing that popped into my head was luxury tax.
You don't say you're going to spend stupid money if you don't mean we're going to blow past the luxury tax like it doesn't exist. Because as I just said on Twitter, it doesn't if you're willing to pay the money. If you're willing to pay the money, it's just extra money that you're paying for the pleasure of spending more money. That's it.
Just tell yourself it's more money for the players you're signing and you don't have to think about it being a penalty.
This is how you build a team, people. You have you don't have to spend money to do it. But you know what? It's a lot more fun. If you have an owner who's willing to, if it's not like the Astros and they're looking to squeeze, every angry penny out of a player you know, get all of the worth out of them for as little money as possible, then fine. Yeah, that's a way to win baseball games. But it's also a lot of fun to sign all the best players on the market, like the Red Sox and the Yankees tend to do, and to just beat the crap out of everyone all the time. The Phillies did it in 2011, and it was super fun.
Well, you,
yeah, this is one way to do it, and this is a way that we've never seen the Phillies do it before. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like scaring people or unnerving people, like where the idea of like them signing people other than Machado and Harper is like, well, they're not going to do that. Oh, they want to do that? Well, I don't know what to think about this team anymore. It's just bizarre that, you know, they were calling this team the Yankees of the NL in 2011, like yeah. you said, when they had the pitching staff. And then, you know, that didn't last very long. But that's exactly what's happening now. This is the model they're following. Like, well, we could play Moneyball for the next 10 years and maybe something will happen. And what a great story that would be. Or we could just take all of this money that we have and John Middleton can just throw it onto the trade market, the free agent market, and all the players could just come here. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the way we've seen the Phillies do it in the past. That doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Well, I think it makes some fans uncomfortable because fans in Philadelphia and most cities always criticize teams that buy a championship. Well, you know what? You still gotta actually win the games. You know, is the '97 Marlins win tainted because they bought a lot of players? It's tainted because they sold everybody off the next year. That's what screwed up the '97 Marlins right. team. But like you guys said on Continued Success last week, and if you guys haven't heard it, make sure you listen to the latest episode of Continued Success. You guys did a really awesome job talking about all the different stuff going on in baseball over the last week. It was a really good show. So make sure you guys check that out. But the trophy isn't any shinier if you win the title by doing it with a low payroll. It doesn't, you know, you don't get better champagne for saving money while you win the title. You don't get to ride in fancier cars in the parade. The ticker tape isn't made of shredded cash when you're driving down Broad Street, you know.
Maybe that's the penalty for the luxury tax. Who knows?
Shredded money, the shredded money, yeah, the ticker tape, yeah. Okay, couple other things and then we have to wrap up here, but Jason Stark just tweeted out hitters with 600 or more plate appearances in 2018 and under 70 strikeouts, there were only three players in baseball, Gene Segura, Michael Brantley, and Andrelton Simmons. So clearly one of the premier low strikeout guys in baseball. And John Heyman's reporting, as of this moment, no word that Segura has agreed to waive his full no trade yet. Mariners have been in talks with Philly about Segura, and Bob Nightingale says they have agreement on players. So I guess as we're finishing up here, guys, it looks like this is going to go down, the first big move for the Phillies here this offseason. Final thoughts, Justin, on Segura, on where things stand as we are about a week away from the winter meetings.
I think it's the right move. Regret as you can glean from it, I think it's the right move. I think this is where this team has found itself at this point. As disappointing as the end of the season was in 2018, I think it'll be easy to forget. And statistically, it was a step forward in the amount of wins they finished with and the team they were putting on the field. So to improve on that team by taking some risks and signing better players is exactly what this team set out to do in this offseason. So all we can do with young players we're waiting to develop is see how they develop with other teams. So you won't really know, like with any trade involving players of J.P. Crawford's age or other prospects, is all we'll really know is what the future will tell us. What we know about Gene Segura is he's a good fit for this team. He fills a position of need. His bat in the lineup would make the team a lot better offensively. And it sets the team up to make some it's going to be a very wacky winter meetings. And it certainly signifies that because the Phillies aren't done yet. And that we've received no indication that makes it seem like they're going to slow down. If anything, their craziest moves are yet to come.
Liz, final thoughts for you as we are about a week away from the hot stove. And it looks like we've got Segura in the fold.
Get here quicker. Get here quicker. I'm glad the Phillies have done something. If we had to spend the next week just being like, is it time? Is it time yet? Is it time for them to do something? Is it time? We'd all just fling ourselves into open volcanoes. So I'm glad that they're doing something. I'm excited about Segura. I'm very excited about Segura. So, now they should go sign Bryce Harper immediately.
Yep, go sign Bryce Harper.
Poised on the buy button for a brand new full price Harper jersey. Sure, the finger, it's hovering. Phillies fans everywhere. They're just hovering. Make it happen, John Middleton. Come on.
And we all know that if it is Harper, that'll happen at the winter meetings in Las Vegas, Harper's hometown. But that's probably
going to... Oh, God, yes, you're right.
That's probably where it's going to happen. I think Machado, and I think Machado waits until after the Harper signing goes down, although maybe not. But, you know, if they do get Machado and Segura, that would be awesome as well. Also, if that happens, bring me Michael Brantley or bring me Bryce. You know, there's so many different ways the Phillies. Just bring me all of them. Bring me all of the good players to get this team back into contention in 2019. So this is the hot stove, gang. This is what we've been waiting years for, the Phillies to go all in and start to make some of these moves, and it's all happening. So make sure you stay with us here at thegoodfight.com. Check out the website every day. We'll be analyzing all the moves that come down the pike. Make sure to check out every Hit and Season podcast. Make sure to check out every Continued Success podcast. Make sure to check out the Dirty Inning. Make sure that you go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/hit and season. We'll be throwing some more content up there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hit and Season.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.